Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Late Night with a Hero. This is Yvonne Smith, your host, back from summer hiatus. And tonight, we're going to be talking about what we can do in this new political climate that we're in. Supposed to be joined shortly by Val Marsh. I hope that she's coming in here now. Val, are you on the line? Oh, okay. I've got a message that she's coming on soon. But Val Marsh is the executive director for the National Coalition for Mental Health Recovery. And I wanted to have her on because, as you know, Congress is out of session right now, and they'll be back next month. And when we left off earlier part of the summer, the House Murphy Bill had passed through the Energy and Commerce Committee and was sent on to the floor. It has not been voted on the floor. Senate version by Senator Alexander of Tennessee, Senate Bill 2680, had also passed the Senate. And what happens is that both houses actually have to agree on the same bill. And so right now they have two bills that are not identical. Neither one have been voted on by their respective houses, so that they could go to conference. And conference is something that occurs when you have two unlike bills from the two separate houses. It happens to be the way that our government is. We have a bicameral houses, and any bill that has to do with money has to start in the House first. So we have that bill there. Plus, I also wanted to, before the end of the show, to get ideas about what other kinds of guests you'd like to have on the show, and also what's happening in your various states. Val, are you on now?
Yeah, I am. I'm sorry it took me too long. I apologize.
Nah, no big deal. So I was just giving, I don't know whether you heard, I just giving a recap of where the two mental illness bills, I don't like to say mental health because they're mental illness, and there have been some other things that have gone on. I understand that the SAMHSA has a new executive director, is that right, for a medical director?
It's they've just created a new position. I think it's called the chief medical officer, they have filled that position with a woman that those of us from Virginia might know pretty well, maybe those folks from Maryland as well. But her name is Dr. Anita Everett, and she is a psychiatrist. But I have to say, when I sent out the notice on our Google group, I know Anita very well, and I think SAMHSA made a great decision. I think it was a really good thing to hire her. They needed a doctor on staff to blunt the fervor of the medical model, ideologues, shall we say, politely. But Anita is, she was the first Inspector General in Virginia. They've had a bunch since, and if you've been following Virginia, you know their most recent Inspector General is doing a terrible job. But Anita was the very first one, and she hired teams of consumers to go into the state hospitals. Virginia had nine. I assume they still have nine. And consumers, she created her teams and had consumers go in and do inspections and make recommendations. She is a person that has good respect, I think, for the consumer point of view. And I think I think it's a good move for SAMHSA. Nobody talked to me about it. I'm not pulling a SAMHSA line or doing any public advertising for them because nobody's talked to me about it. But I will say strategically it makes sense to me that they would bring a doctor on board, not to head SAMHSA, not to, you know, supervise
SAMHSA. But to get ahead
I'm sorry?
But to get ahead of the criticism that some people have had.
She's going to help them. And frankly, she's the new president-elect for the APA, which is astonishing. But I think she's going to, I think she has the capacity. I won't say it's a done deal, but I think she has the capacity to at least help us change the conversation with other stakeholders. I believe that. I really do. I believe that about her.
She's the new president for the American Psychiatric Association?
President-elect, yes.
Seems like they just changed these. How long are these terms? It seems like they just.
I don't know.
Just
I don't know.
How long
and
they
you,
just
usually 2 years, 2-3 year terms.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll see. Time to tell.
Exactly.
And
we'll
get ahead of some of the. Well, she may have to step down from that.
I don't know. We'll see. I gather not, because they put it in the, you know, it was a part of the release information that I saw from other organizations. I haven't seen anything from SAMHSA yet, but other organizations have released announcements and congratulations that have said that she is the president-elect of the APA.
Well, I know that in both of those bills, it appeared that they wanted the head of SAMHSA actually to be somebody,
right,
with a medical degree. For those people that are on, and we got quite a few people that are listening tonight, that they wanted. You know, the bills indicate they're very specific about the person being an MD doctor or a psychologist, PhD,
right,
not any of the other disciplines. So they were very specific about that. And we're coming upon election year too. But before we get into that, I had noticed a couple of things. I went on Open Secrets, and I could see that many of the members of the Health Committee and of the Energy Committee, those are the two committees for people who are listening who have had both of these bills. And it seems as though a lot of the medical interests have given a lot of money to them. So if people listening, if they want to check out their congressperson, or either they can check out, they can go to opensecrets.org and they can check out either per congressman or per senator or either the committees. You can check out and see who has gotten money and where it's coming from. Not saying that people are bought or anything like that, but you can see who's getting heavy donations from the mental health or the health industry. They don't say, some of them are PACs, and PACs can give a lot of money to organizations. Now, Val, where are we now with both of these bills now? I mean, what have you heard? What's looking?
Let's see, to say this in as few words as possible. I don't even know. I don't know how to explain it quickly, but let me just.
Don't do it quickly. Do it so people can understand.
Okay, good. Okay. Let's see. The original Murphy bill, the Tim Murphy bill, which was the House bill, House Bill 2646, has already passed through the House. It passed out of committee, and then they had a full House vote on it. And despite best efforts at the last minute, because they only gave us over the 4th of July holiday to fight it, the House bill passed overwhelmingly. There were only
I didn't know that it had passed. It had passed. It has passed the House full, on the full House.
Oh yeah, that was the thing that happened. I consider it personally, from my point of view, the 4th of July massacre, because they let us know on Friday, I think that was July 1st, that they were voting on it the following Wednesday. And so I worked for 4 days straight, pulling together an action alert at the last minute to get people to call their members of the House and tell them to say no. And, it was too late. And they knew that. But I'm sorry?
Okay, so it passed the House.
Yep.
What
it passed the House. I'm sorry?
And the Senate bill, which is different, where is that?
Yeah, the Senate bill has not been voted on yet. The Senate bill is Senate Bill 2680, and it has passed. It was passed through the Health and Energy Committee that you were just talking about. So it's already passed committee. It's Chris Murphy's bill. Tim Murphy from Pennsylvania in the House, Chris Murphy from Connecticut in the Senate, and he basically developed the bill as a response to the Sandy Hook tragedy. And that bill
is this the same bill that Alexander is the author of?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Lamar Alexander, the chair of the committee, is a co-sponsor. And a number of others. I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry. I'm trying to read this action alert that I just sent you. But anyway, so the Senate bill was left, it's still on the table, so to speak. And theoretically, the Senate could decide to take the bill up when they return from their recess in September. So there is still a distinct possibility that 2680 would come up for a vote anywhere from September through, December. I think the likelihood is diminishing rapidly, though I can't say for sure that they won't. I think they've got elections, they've got a budget that they have to pass, they've got all kinds of things that are to them more important than we are, that's for sure. But I think that I would not dare to guess if they are going to entertain the bill as the full Senate on the floor or not. And I say that, and that means let's just assume they are going to, even if they aren't. We have to assume the worst. At any rate, I think I heard you explaining what happens in conference, and that is actually step two of the process.
I feel very hopeful because people. I've been getting ragged by people by keep posting how a bill becomes law because it is a long process and
It is.
So it's a long process and it can work in our favor, but right now, I guess people should be looking at 2680, the bill.
Yes.
There are two
distinct schools of thought about 2680. There are some advocates among us in the consumer survivor community who believe that 2680 is every bit as bad as House Bill 2646, the original Murphy bill, and there are those of us who believe that we should be telling our members of the Senate to say no to both bills. Just say no to both of them. They stink. And that is certainly understandable. I understand why other people believe that, and I don't agree. I think even if you are in that mindset that the Senate bill is not good either and why do it, okay, you can go with that, but it still means that we have a problem because we still have this House bill to contend with because not only can they use the House bill in conference, but they can also put amendments on the bill. Now, the Senate bill doesn't – it can have amendments attached to it, And those could include language from the House bill that just passed overwhelmingly. And so the task is to either get the Senate bill to stay as is, or, you know, toss both bills out. But we don't want the poison of the House bill to bleed into the Senate. So the most urgent task that we have is for people to get in touch with all of their senators. And, you know, if you got two in your state, both of them in every state need to be targeted, and they need to be, understand why, at a minimum, any amendments from the House side are unacceptable. And then, you know, to my mind, the Senate bill is not a great bill, but the utility of the Senate bill is that it answers all of the problems with the House bill. That's the reason to support it, is that it blunts all of the most serious problems of outpatient commitment, you know, additional, the medicalization of SAMHSA, all of those really ugly, you know, forced
the
treatment
children,
in general.
The little bill part about screening children and things like that, yeah. And so,
I think the at a minimum, if people want to be doing something helpful, they would be should be getting in touch with their senators, saying when 2680 comes up for consideration, do not allow any amendments into it at all. Period.
And if people want to do it in an easy way, if they're busy, I can just tell you if you how I track the bills. I go to www. And I'll repeat this again, govtrack.us, that's govtrack.us. And if you put in Senate 2680, in fact, you can get a digest into you either every day or once a week of where the bill is so that you can know. And on that website, they even have a little space where you call Congress from your from the computer, and your congressman's or your senator's office, whichever you choose, will call you back. So you don't even need to know. Some people don't even know who the senator is, but it will have the Senate office call you back so that you can tell them. Yeah, I think that they have a lot of things going on, but we shouldn't because, I mean, we just didn't think that the House bill would have a snowball's chance in hell to even pass because of all the things, and they had sort of watered it down so they could get agreement.
Unfortunately, that's not true. I have seen, and I'm not the only one, I think Dara Baldwin in, at NDRN, what does that stand for, Yvonne? I can't even remember.
National Disability Rights Network. Disability Rights.
Yeah. She is their sort of chief person on the Hill, and her assessment is the same as mine, and that is that the Senate staff that she's talked to have all said, what's the problem with the House bill? We hear from the House that all the ugly problems with the Murphy bill have already been addressed, and what passed was fine and dandy. And that's what I hear. Every time I talk to people, staffers of senators, they all say, what's the problem? There's no problem with the House. So they don't know. They don't know that the House health bill is still poison. They don't think it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're ripe for amendments in addition to the conference committee. But
so
the
we
other
have to
thing...
Still be-
I was going to say, the other thing that is distressing, and I wasn't made aware of this until very recently, but apparently both Chris Murphy and Susan Collins from Maine introduced an amendment to put a lot more money toward inpatient care through Medicaid, more than what's already been done with the IMD exclusion relaxing, you know, the CMS, the Center for Medicaid, Medicare, already opened up from a regulatory way of paying for 15 days a month of inpatient care. And Susan Collins and Chris Murphy have already introduced one amendment to increase that money. And that is really scary to me. I was not aware of that until very recently. And the fact that we have two fairly progressive, even Susan Collins is Republican, but you know, many people would say she's not really, but that they would introduce a bill to the money committees to say, yes, we believe that more money needs to be put into Medicaid to pay for inpatient care. That is really scary.
Mm-hmm. So what I hear you saying, and you can correct me, is that people still should be talking to their congresspersons and to the Senate because
yes.
They haven't gotten the message.
Right.
As far as they're concerned, they think that people have ironed out the things in the Senate, in the House version. And so when they go to conference, you know, it's more than likely, since if they want to have a bill passed this time, that they would come to some kind of agreement.
Right. And even before mm-hmm. conference. I think if the Senate takes up 2680 before the end of the lame duck session, I think just taking up the bill, there is danger of them voting on amendments from the floor of the Senate that include House language. So waiting until conference is not a good strategy. We have to help them understand now, before they even vote on 2680, that the House bill, in any form, in any version, cannot have language that gets amended to into the Senate bill. We just can't do it. It's too toxic. So it's really a two-step process. The one, we have to get people telling their senators when they vote on 2680 that they can't be amended. And then number two, whatever passes out of the Senate, 2680, that's step two. When they go to conference and they reconcile with the House, then we have to make sure they're refortified to say, no, you passed something in the Senate, don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it cannot include anything from the House bill because it's just too toxic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to tell folks how they can call in because basically you've given us the lowdown of what's happened. The number to call in, because I think it would be good to hear what's happening in your state and where your state congressmen and senators are on this. But the phone number is 267-521-0167. Again, our phone number is 267-521-0167. And you can press 1 or star 1. I never can tell which one it is. It depends on whether you're on a cell phone or on a landline. But if you can try either one of those if you want to come in. In fact, I have lines open now, so if someone wants to make a comment or tell us what they have found to be true for their congressmen and senators. And Val, while we're waiting for people to come in, this is a time also because quite a few of the senators are up for re-election.
Right.
Especially on the Republican side. And I see I'm not saying anything about any party, but I see that there's some dissension in the Republican ranks, and that I guess people want to hold on to their seats for the next go around. And of course, Congress, they run every 2 years, so they're still at home for they come back after Labor Day. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the beginning of September, I believe.
Yeah, they come back after Labor Day, so many of your representatives have, unless they're on vacation, they have their own offices in their home district. Congressmen do, and so are the senators. So even if you've already talked to them, this might be a good time to, in fact, you have probably have a better chance of talking to the representative in person in your home district than you would if you were in Washington. But in any case, ask to speak to the person who, if you cannot get an appointment with the congressman or senator, get an appointment with the staff person who handles that issue. And
yes.
I think this is a good time for people to, you know, have letter writing parties. Letters, snail mail sometimes have a stronger effect than email or either calling. And I don't know, Val, do you know this the bill that the senator introduced for Maine, the amendment, will this be an additional money on top of what's already available in the community? Because from what I understand is it's Medicaid is not a potless end of money, because
right.
One of the reasons why some of us are worried about it, because that would mean that money would be taken from community resources.
Yes.
And for hospitalization, but you're saying that now she's introduced a bill even saying that they need more.
Right.
More hospitalization.
Yes.
So,
I mean, that's the scary part. I think that the feds, CMS and SAMHSA have tried to appease the forced treatment fervor. And I think that, they're trying what they can. And so they did a relaxation of the IMD exclusion to allow for 15 beds a month to be paid for by Medicaid. And that's new. And that in itself is worrisome. But on top of that, then we have Susan Collins and Chris Murphy wanting to put in amendments that would put in even more than that. And every dollar that goes into inpatient care, we will never see. We will never see it. And that has been, frankly, the real reason for the failure of deinstitutionalization, is they won't fund community care, and then when a crisis happens because nobody's getting any help, then they go back to saying, oh, well, we need to fund the hospital. Well, you know, no S, Sherlock.
I wonder what's happening is in Maine, if there's anybody who's in Maine who's on it. They can tell us maybe what the rationale is for.
I know Maine. I know the advocates there. I know Simone, and I have some students there, and I know the folks at the Disability Rights Agency. They're PNA there, but. I think they need to step up their advocacy, and it needs to really intensely focus on Susan Collins without ignoring Angus King. He needs it too, but he's a more liberal guy than Susan, probably not by much. But the main mental health consumer organization. So what is the Mental Health Consumer Council? I think that's what it's called in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And Simone Moline, I'm sorry.
No, we're listening.
I'm sorry. I was just saying that I know some of the members of the Consumer Council there, and I know one of the members of the PAMI Council up there is a former student of mine, and I have put them on red alert and said, "Oh God, you gotta go see her, help." So, and that's what I would say to everybody. Susan Collins is certainly important, but every single member of the Senate, all 100 senators, are important. And what I would say to anybody is if you are willing and able to call, visit, write, whatever you do, let me know. Email me at, valmarsh@ncmhr.org, and let me know what you've done. and then I will follow up. I've got, you know, over 500 members of Congress, ultimately, that I need to visit. But it only makes sense to me to prioritize those members of Congress who have a constituency at home that are on them. Going in blind to a state, and, we, you know, in terms of the coalition, we only have members officially from 30 states out of 50. There are 20 states that we have no official members of the coalition. So we're already at a serious handicap. But that said, in terms of prioritizing, we've got to prioritize the Senate members that are on the Help Committee and the Senate members that are on the Finance Committee. Those two groups of senators in our Congress need the most pressure, and they need to hear from advocates to say, do not support anything to do with the House bill that is coming before you in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm. And that they need to know that it's not all right, that it's different. I was just looking up Susan Collins. It may be that she needs money. Because I know this is, doesn't sound very well. She only has $858,000 on her end. It seems as though for her senatorial campaign and it looks like she gets a lot of money from professionals.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised.
But people from the various coalition states that you have, how does a person find out if the congressman or senator is a person that's bendable or not? And I would say to go in and talk to everybody, but they said it didn't make sense. Go in and talk.
I was just saying that special emphasis, it was especially urgent to get to the members of the Help Committee because they've already considered their bill and passed it. It's already, the Senate bill has already passed out of committee. It's waiting to go to the floor. So the Help Committee members are the most familiar with it, and they'll be the easiest to talk to because they've considered the matter before. The Money Committee members are also equally important, because, you know, they're going to be asked to vote on additional money for anything. And it's important for us to make sure we get a clear message to Money Committee members that, you know, investing in inpatient care is investing in the wrong end of the spectrum of the continuum of care for the community. It does not help the crisis that people perceive us to be in. To continue to fund the wrong end of the funnel, basically.
Well, I agree with that 100%. I was just at the Ask State Hospital that's in my neighborhood, and they have no water. The place that you visit, they haven't had water for a week now. So I think even some of these places are not good places for people to be.
No.
I mean, I don't even know why they call them hospitals.
I agree.
At all, it's very expensive to keep a person in a hospital versus to give them the supports that they need in the community. Again, our phone number is 267-521-0167. If anyone wants to join us, I see we have people from a lot of area codes. We have a 207 area code, which I understand is Maine.
Yep.
813-865-718-410. So if you'd like to comment or ask a question, please the lines are open. You can come on in now.
I'd like to see something about the money going out to the community.
Where are you calling from, sir?
Tampa, Florida.
Oh, I recognize this voice. How you doing?
Okay.
All right.
I've been looking at
go
how
ahead.
Much peer support has been helping peers, how much they do to help themselves and each other. I feel a lot of the money should be going back to drop-in centers. In Florida, drop-in centers are losing a lot of money due to budget cuts.
Mm-hmm.
But those peers are helping each other stay out of the hospital.
Well, both of these bills, are, especially the House bill, are very medicalized. And there was something in the both bills about peer specialists, about making the requirements, medical requirements for the peer specialists.
I'm not talking about peer specialists. They want peers who are being there for each other. Peers
right.
who understand what each other are going through because they've been through it.
Yes. And you know what? Guess what? In the Murphy bill in particular, they accept that for people with substance use problems. They accept that people who have been there understand people who are there. But Tim Murphy does not accept that for people with mental health conditions. He doesn't because he's going on the advice of Fuller Torrey, who says basically there are two kinds of people with mental health issues in the world. Number one is the people who don't admit that they're ill and we have to ram it down their throats and force them to do what we want. And if you're not in that category, everybody else is a charlatan and is a worried well person and doesn't deserve any help. So that's the way they divide the world for us. You can't. You don't know what you're doing, so we have to force it on you, or you don't count.
But this time, I'm trying to do something else as well. I'm trying to get support groups held within our local hospitals on the mental ward. So anytime somebody's being victimized and they don't have support at home, they can learn about peer support and how much it does to help. When they're discharged, they can find a support group and start attending.
Yep. And then, you know, I have to say to you what I used to say to people in Virginia when I was an advocate there for 10 years, and that is that you're being entirely too logical. And I'm sorry, but that's the truth.
Well,
that
so
you're being entirely too logical.
County Sheriff's Office behind this? Police Department's behind this? Because it's going to cut down on bakeries?
Yep. I agree with you completely. Consumer-run services, I'm a believer.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in a drop-in center for 16 years. I love drop-in centers. I believe in them strongly. But it's a matter of money.
How is your senator in Florida? How are your two senators? I know Marco Rubio is one of them, and I don't know who the other senator is.
Bill Nelson does good.
Will you go and talk to? Will you go talk or call both of them?
I didn't go to Bill Nelson. I wasn't going to do anything to Marco Rubio.
I think Marco might be in a little trouble, so he might want to hear from a lot of folks in Florida.
Well, if I may. Another suggestion that I have, and I hate to give people more work because I know we're all running ragged, but ideally what everybody across the country should be working on is, in addition to getting in touch with their members of Congress, during this election season, if you can at all work on a candidate's forum about mental health issues and invite them to send representatives from their campaigns, then you can put them on the spot and say, what are you going to do about the mental health problems and the bills that are currently before you? And that way, you know, even if, for those that are on shaky ground, they're going to want to learn a lot more to keep their jobs. But the other thing is if they don't win, if their challengers win, then, you know, we need people to be educated about mental health issues and the mental health bills before they hit the ground. So I strongly encourage anybody out there to put together a candidates forum for any member of Congress whether it's, you know, a House member or a Senate member, and make it a mental health-based candidates forum and give them the questions ahead of time even. Tell them this is what we want to know. Come prepared.
Right, and if they won't come, at least if you give all the candidates the same questions,
yeah,
you know, and to get the answers, because I've done that where you ask. I learned that from Ken Steele in New York. You develop like, you know, 7 or 10 questions that are very important, and then you ask for them to respond. You give them the amount of time to respond to it. And,
right,
you know, make sure that they understand also that you're not saying that they should go. When you say, what are they going to do about mental health issues, make sure that they know completely that you are against the any of the provisions in the Murphy bill.
The House bill.
In the House bill. And for some of us, it says, well, you know, you're against the Senate bill too, but if they just have to pass something, don't make any amendments to the Senate bill at all. I think I wish someone from Maine would come in. Maybe the reason why they added that to the bill was because you know, somebody thinking about it would say, what you're going to do is you're going to rob the community service programs so that people can be kept in the hospital.
Right.
And that's going to affect a lot more people, and it's much more expensive to keep people, you know, in hospitals. And some of these states still have lawsuits. You know, that.
Yes.
Well,
Maine among them. I mean, Maine's been under a consent decree for, I don't know, 30, 40 years, something crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't
and you
even
would
matter.
Think that, will they do this now? Would they have to, the COB, would they have to come back and rescore the bill if it has these attachments for money?
Yeah, I think so. They are, and that's, you know, the one thing we have going for us, which is perverse, at this point in time, is actually in our best interest for them not to spend any money on the mental health system, because the only money they're going to spend is either for inpatient care or forced treatment. So it would be in our best interest for them not to spend a dime. We don't need any more of that crap. Stop spending money on the wrong stuff. So that's a very sort of Republican-friendly stance, if you will. No more money. Don't do it. But, you know, I mean, face it, it's a bipartisan form of neglect that we've been experiencing for the last 5 decades. Doesn't matter whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. They're not friendly to people, you know, to consumers or survivors. They don't care.
Well,
we
explain,
have to make them care.
What is, explain what COB is. So,
the COB is the budget folks, right? And what they do is they wind up taking
budget.
Yeah, they take any bill at all in the world, and they crunch the numbers to figure out, if we pass this bill, how much would it cost us? And so, you know, that is. To my mind, that's the key answer. They, you know, in Virginia, I used to see all the time, they would pass all kinds of amazing bills, but if they didn't spend a dime on it, who cared? It doesn't matter. If they can't put their money where their mouth is, nothing's going to really change. It's all words. Who cares? But if they're going to spend money on it, we need to make sure that they're spending money in the right direction and not in the wrong direction. So whatever price tag the COB puts on, you know, we have to be able to use that information to our advantage to argue our own case. I would like to think that we can argue that voluntary services, especially peer-run services like peer respite and drop-in centers and peer coaches and et cetera, all of those things are much more cost-effective And I have found, I know I've had people push back on me, especially about peer respites, because I've been chasing numbers to prove that peer respites are cost-effective. And I was basically told that being cost-effective was not a decent argument, that it's just we need to argue for it being the right thing to do. And while I appreciate that point of view, frankly, I don't think it's realistic. You know, it's about money. It's follow the money. You know, Deep Throat said it how many decades ago? Follow the money. That's where our values are. That's where our belief of importance is. Where is the money and where isn't the money? And the money isn't mm-hmm. with us. I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mr. Rose, you said about horse treatment. I've heard a complaint about that. I've heard so many people say they don't like the idea of being put in the hospital. They're taking off all their medication and the doctor they're seeing placed on all this other medication by another doctor they've never seen before, having to leave the hospital on all his medication, then go back to their doctor.
Yeah, that's continuity of care, the breakdown.
Yeah, it's a horrible. But I've seen that.
Horrible.
I've seen it when Centera in the community won't cover a medication, but if you get so bad, you get in the hospital, they'll put you on a medication. Once you go back in the community, it isn't covered again. You know, it's all about money. It isn't really what works or what's effective or what's humane or what makes sense. It's who
mm-hmm.
gets the money, who's benefiting.
And that's why I'm a big believer of people going to Open Secrets and seeing where your congressman or where they who is giving to their campaigns. And I think that you've given good advice about working on people's campaigns, too.
Yeah.
So that you can be in a place, even if you're, you know, I found even if you're just a telephone caller or a canvasser, when you call, you get so much more respect when you say, well, yeah, I worked on this campaign.
Yeah.
You get so much more out of that. The lines are open, so if anyone else wants to call, wants to make a comment, come in, please feel free to do so, or if you're listening by way of web or podcast, this is August the 14th. The number is 267-521-0167. And later on, before we let Val go, I would like to have people to tell us or to tell me what kinds of shows they'd like to have on in the next 2 months. I am going to have Mike Buckmeyer from Wisconsin for the National Coalition of Independent Living Centers Mental Health Committee to come on next week, next Sunday. So mark your calendars for that time. I did invite for this show, I invited someone from Babylon, and I invited Dara, but I know that I got an email bounced back that she was on vacation.
Yeah,
and,
she'll be back Monday. She'll be back Monday.
So that was another thing. There are other players at the table, and I think that sometimes people don't see that. They know about the NAMIs, they know about the TAC, but who else are the players who are trying to educate Congress that you can name?
Well, we are in a coalition that, the NDRN facilitates a coalition of people and or of organizations, I should say. And the other members include, it's the Coalition for Mental Health Reform, as opposed to Mental Health Recovery, which is our acronym. But the members of the Coalition for Mental Health Reform include the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, also known as ASAN, Babylon Center for Mental Health Law, the National Association of County Behavioral Health and Developmental Disability Directors, National Association of Rural Mental Health. Both of those are Ron Nendeshide-headed organizations. Of course, us, the National Coalition for Mental Health Recovery, the National Coalition on Independent Living, the National Disability Rights Network, the National LGBTQ Task Force Action Fund, and the New York Association of Psychiatric Rehabilitative Services. So those are our allies.
What was the last group?
After NDRN is the National LGBTQ. Sorry, I'm getting the alphabet soup wrong. Task Force Action Fund, and then the final one was the New York Association of Psychiatric Rehab Services.
Okay.
All right.
So, NICOL and IASPRIS and the county and rural mental health centers and Babylon, and then the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. Those are our basic allies.
Mm-hmm.
That's on that the document that I sent to you, Yvonne, that looks at 2646, not just from the mental health advocate's point of view, but from all of those other people's point of view. All of us in that coalition worked over a document about concerns about the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act, which is the Murphy Bill. And we put together a document that's dated August the 4th, and it has in it, I guess it's about a six-page document in large print that describes what's wrong with the Murphy Bill from a cross-disability and cross-civil rights perspective.
Yeah, I think I've seen that, too.
Yeah.
The first one is
about medicalizing SAMHSA with the doctor, the new assistant secretary position, which we disagree with. The second one is they've come up with yet another grievance procedure for PAMI because they're mad at the PNAs. And then the third one is about not putting any people with lived experiences on the new entities that they're calling for in the Murphy Bill, like there's a National Mental Health Substance Use Lab, the policy laboratory, and we're not on it. We ain't invited to the table. The fourth one is one that I hadn't paid much attention to. Frankly, I don't have enough expertise in kids' issues, and I wish I did. But the children's issues, what the coalition together as a group has agreed to is saying that
it's not in the Senate bill.
No, but that's still, you have to say what's wrong with the House bill if you're going to talk about the Senate bill. That's really where we are.
Right.
We can't talk about 2680 without talking about 2646. The two are now twins. Anywhere they go, they're attached to each other, and you can't talk about one without the other.
Okay, I got a little blurb here because someone evidently just came in when we were naming all those groups. And Val is saying, and you can correct me, Val, if I'm wrong, is that the National Coalition for Mental Health Recovery is in a they're not just up there on the hill by themselves. These other groups work in tandem or try to come to some kind of consensus. Is that correct?
That is correct. In fact, I mean, I would say that they are, I only work 2 days a week, and a lot of these folks in these other organizations, they are really there more than I am, to be quite honest.
Because they have full-time, they have full-time people, and some of them I've heard on the show that people may not have understood why, but they have more, sometimes even more than one. They have full-time people that are up there, and
I think especially NICOL and New York IASPRIS, those folks are on the coalition, and they're doing a lot of work. NICOL is, they're a good ally, and they're across disability.
Yeah, because I had mentioned we had Kelly Buckland, who was executive director on the show back in, I think it was May, and they have a mental health committee. And anyone can be on it if they're a member of NICL. All you have to do is be a, but you have to be a member. I'm on their mental health committee. They have a civil rights committee. And I'm telling you that they pump some iron at NICL. So, and some of the other, that was another reason for me to list those groups because so that people will know, you know, who is there because we're the kids on the block.
That's true.
The other groups like TAC and NAMI, they have people who've been there for decades.
Yep.
They know their people by name. And some of them, the reason to go to Open Secrets is because you can see where people, like I looked it up, and gets quite a bit of money from the healthcare industry. You can see who gets money from a particular drug company or not.
Right.
Babylon, New York Actress, and all of these other groups. They take a position, it's not just, we should have enough power, but we need these other allies.
Oh, yeah. We absolutely need our allies, and we absolutely need to grow our own numbers internally. The advocates that we have across the country, I have found more and more that they are amazing people, people that have been in the trenches now for one decade, maybe four or five, for heaven's sake. But we've got great advocates out there, but we don't have enough. We need more. We have to grow it. We've got to get more people out there.
It's a different ball game on the Capitol Hill than it is maybe in state legislature. It's a totally different. Different ball game, and it's very tedious for anything to get through. And when there are some issues like this, they want to compromise, and that's why we have to really call our congressperson, call our senators. I mean, I know that many people say they've already talked to people, but you need to constantly remind them and to ask them if they need any clarification, because what Val is saying is this is what it said unanimously, Val, that people are saying they think that everything is okey-dory with the Murphy bill now.
Yes, the original Murphy bill was over 300 pages long, and so people like Leah Harris and Babylon and those folks really worked hard, and the bill is now like less than half that. I think it's 140, 120 pages, something like that. So they had a lot of stuff that they insisted be taken out, and God bless them for doing that. But the problem is now the members of the House and now the members of the Senate, too, think that all of that wrangling and taking 150 pages out of the Murphy bill makes it dandy, and that's not true. They certainly took out a lot of toxic stuff, but what's left isn't any prettier, and that's what people in Congress don't know. They think that since it was massaged and worked on and advocates came through and said these are the things that are unacceptable, they think that the version that came out of the House and was voted on unanimously is okay. And I'll tell you, the one of the things that shocked me the most, Diane Anster, God bless her, she and I were talking about Don Beyer in the House, and I worked with Don when I was at NAMI.
Okay, people, can you mute your phone? I'm gonna take people. What area code are you calling from? Just the area code, Val.
I'm calling from 207.
Okay, all right. I'm gonna take other folk off because I'm getting background. I'm taking them off. Keep talking.
What I was going to say is Don Beyer is a progressive Democrat liberal in the House. I knew him and I worked with him. Diane called him. And basically what he said, or his staff said in essence, is, you know, we support the bill in the House. The bill that went through the House was perfect, fine. We have no problem with it. And, you know, that's the way that the Murphy bill is now is fine with us. And we're not interested in discussing anything else. So, and that was a liberal guy. I mean, Don Beyer is about as liberal as they come. For him to rebuke, for his staff to rebuke Diane, who wanted to give them new information about how the Murphy bill was not okay, the fact that they wouldn't even entertain it, that's very scary. That's very scary stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was trying to say to people when we were talking about how a bill becomes law. And I was saying that the mood was that they wanted to pass some mental health bill this time.
Yep.
They want to desperately pass something. I don't know why it's so, but I don't know why it is. I don't know if the treatment before tragedy and the other groups have leaned on them very hard, because you saw when we went up there. I mean, they have money, so they have seat warmers.
Right.
I have never seen that before.
Oh, yeah.
What the seat warmers are, in other words, we were there at 6:30 in the morning. They had three people. There are people that's their job to hold their space so they can have the first seat.
That's right, Ivan. You and you and I, there were two other women, the four of us were there in the seat of tackers. Oh, my God. Tack and Nami, they were around the strangling. It was horrible.
Well, they're treating me before tragedy people, because, see, they have a lot of spinoff groups that they get a lot of money. They're nonprofits. I can't even look up Jaffe's group anymore because they have a private website, so I can't look at mentalhealthpolicy.org anymore. But they have all these spinoff groups, and they have a lot of money. Because they fly people in. And, in fact, one of the people there from California, Torres, had told me, well, she would be back in July and August. So I guess that was the figment that they would be back, because the bill would be supposedly moved out.
The Senate would love to bury the bill and kick the can down the field. That's what the Senate would really like to do. If they wind up voting on the bill before this Congress goes home for good, it will be because they've gotten pressure, too much pressure from NAMI and TAC and the APA and the mental health community, Mental Health of America, all of those groups together, and all of them have thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people to put the pressure on Congress and the Senate to take it up earlier. It would be in our best interest for them to delay it and wait until we see what the new Congress looks like and have that extra time to do some educating. But if they came in, it will be because NAMI and TAC and Mental Health America and APA and Pharma and all those folks say, now, 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 we want it now, do it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so people have to get organized to keep talking to the people while they're at home these next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yep, yeah. If it's possible.
make enough noise so that they understand that this is an imperfect bill still.
Yes.
And in that case, that makes it seem like hold the line on, you know, to me it's, you know, ditch the Senate bill, but if you have to have the Senate bill, do not put any of the provisions from the Murphy bill in there.
Right. If you were to just look at, and Yvonne, you have been sending people to the remind me, it's the site that has the bills on it, the .gov site. I can't find it now. I had it. It's the
Gov. I can give it again. The government tracker.
Yeah, that's the place where you can find out the status of the bill.
www.govtrack.us.
Right.
And you can even find out how many people are co-sponsors.
Yes.
And that's what I was trying to tell people, that I was just counting, you know, how many people are Republicans on the Senate side and how many co-sponsors were Democrats.
Right.
And
I want to look up who the co-sponsors are for 2680. Let me take a minute to explain, if you're going to go on govtrack.us and look at 2680, it's the first half of the bill is struck, which means that's language that was previously there, and they are now, you'll see dash lines through the language, that's now no longer even a part of the bill. So you have to skip down, I don't know, about 100 pages before you even get to what the bill actually says.
Well, they have two versions, and they have two versions, the struck out version. Yeah, I know what you're saying. You have to go down because they've taken so much out.
Yeah, they have. But what I was going to say is, if you look at 2680 as a standalone bill, the people who object to 2680 are absolutely right. There ain't much in there for us. The problem is, if you look at 2680 versus the House bill, 2646, that's already passed and is waiting for the Senate to take action, everything in the House bill that's wrong with it, everything that I put in my action alert back in July of what was wrong with House bill 2646, the answer to it is in the Senate bill. The Senate bill is the answer to the problem of the House bill. But even so, that doesn't make it a great bill. It doesn't give us anything, but it prevents us from horrible forced treatment. It's really just a Band-Aid to protect us against the forced treatment. That's the only utility of the bill. But that in itself is more than enough reason to support it. Every point that I put in my action alert last month has been responded to. The answer is in the 2680 bill, which is better than going to a senator blind saying, okay, here's this House bill. This is the language I want you to insert instead. It's already there. It's in 2680.
Okay. So one thing for 2680, looking at the bill, some of the things that I see that's bad about it is the two committees. For people like the gentleman that from Florida that really liked his peer support, and you know, I know that I did peer support for a long time without getting paid for it, but peer support organizations have contracts and they're getting paid. One of the things that's in the bill that's very objectionable to me is that the lab committee that they have that. SAMHSA already has a review, NREPP, that has evidence-based practices. You know, the idea that they would set up another committee, they define the committee very medical-like. So all of our evidence-based programs that we've had for peers, they would have to be re-reviewed again. And that they have set up an extra external part of the government where they have all, I don't know, where they would have all of these heads of different agencies, Homeland Security, Department of Defense, Social Security. They have this extra governmental body. I really feel as though those two things are really bad in the bill. And I would hope that as we go forth in the next couple of weeks, that somehow that some of us would get together and look at the things that's in 2680 that are not necessarily that good as well, because
exactly.
it would be better to, you know, I know that most people would feel like, well, like you said, one is no better, but you really got to look at it, and you also have to look at these other bills that they have. There's a Mental Health Awareness and Improvement Act. There's a Mental Health on Campus Improvement Act. There are various. One of the things I love about the GovTrack.us is because it will tell you if there's another bill. One of the things that happened a year ago was people thought that the Murphy bill was out, and then they had a demonstration project on AOT.
Right.
So, and like you said, you only work 2 days a week, and some of us try to keep up on this, but, you know, they have these fantastic tools they have. This tool that I'm talking about is free, but there are tools that people pay thousands of dollars a month.
Right.
So they can keep up on what's happening in Congress, what's happening in the state. And they have more money. I mean,
I can't even get into some journal articles that other advocacy groups pass around because I can't afford it. There are some journals you can't get into unless you've paid, and we don't have that. There's information I have to get. I have to go find somebody who will give it to me because I can't afford it, but they can. All of our adversaries have a lot of money, and they can get a hold of anything they want.
I just wanted to just come back to this, but talk about in Massachusetts, the Boston Globe had a series of articles, that was very bad, and I think many people in that community responded to them. And in fact, they have a safe spotlight on mental illness or mental health. Responded to them, and they had a protest August 1 in front of the Boston Globe, and they were complaining because they said some people didn't read all of the articles, but all you had to do was read one or two, and you know, you could only read five a month unless you're a subscriber. So I know exactly what you're saying, and between them and the Huffington Post. And I mean, they're planting
The New York Times. I mean, you name it.
Yeah, they're planting information, and so also the coalition's Google group. So when you see these articles that are coming out, even if it's in your regional or hometown newspaper, you may want to alert people so that they can hear something different. Because people really do believe that this is the answer, and we know it is not.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming on, Val.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't do enough. I don't get enough done, and I feel bad about that, because God knows there's enough for 20 people to do to make this happen. But I guess I just want to say to people out there, I need you more than you need me. I really do. I need you. I need the grassroots to go into a congressperson's office all alone without any of their constituents who care. It doesn't help me. I go in blind, and I go in without much credibility. But if we can work together, if you can get in touch with your House member and your senators and then let me know, and I'll go back in and reinforce it, then it's like tag team wrestling. We're going back and forth. I need you. You need me. But I don't know. I can't read your mind, and you can't read mine. So we have to be in touch with each other. I will do my best to get better about getting in touch with people. I have to say, quite honestly, I'm all over the place. I've got a Google group from my own organization. There are like three or four different face groups that I'm going with. I hate it because I don't feel like I've got, you know, I can't go to just one place to find out what folks in you know, with lived experience think. I don't know. I have to hear from you. So here's my email address again. It's VAL as in Val dot Marsh MARSH at NCMHR National Coalition for Mental Health Recovery .org. Let me know. If you've gotten in touch with your legislator, please let me know. That will go to the top of my list because they're more likely to listen to me if they have people at home pressuring them. We have to work together.
Okay, let's give people help of what to put in the email. The email should include things such as your state.
Your state, the name of the person, the name of the legislator or legislators that you talk to, and what
if you talk
there.
If you talk to a staffer, give them the staffer's name.
Yes, please. I'm going to create my own contact list from the desk, and I have to tell you that's not a lot of fun, because when you go online, they give you contact information for the legislator's office. But that goes into a general who cares email. And so if I can know who the staff person is, what I've been doing is going into people's offices unannounced and just saying, hello, can you tell me who your staff person is who deals with mental health policy issues? And then I put them on my spreadsheet. And so then I at least have the right name. But I mean, as it is right now, I go into the, you know, info, thank you very much, who cares, talk to you later, maybe, not really.
Okay, so in the email, put the state that you're in.
State, name of legislator, senator, house.
Legislator or staff.
Yeah.
And also, if the person is leaning against the bill or for the bill, let them know.
Yeah.
And I would say if you want to put your full name or if there's something about them, especially if you've got a congressman that knows you personally, you know, put some information that Val could, you know, use if it's something that you know about them. If you're, and in some of these congressional districts, it's highly possible, if you're congressman's son goes fly fishing with your grandfather, you know, put that in there. Sometimes that personal connection is, but put, you know, when you talk to them and whether they're leaning this way or that way and any contact information that you have, because many of these congress people, they will have, they will have a block where you have to go on and fill something out. So if you have their personal email, let Val know what the email is. If you know what they
Yeah, I hate this block. I hate this block. I feel like I'm just sending information into the, you know, cyberspace.
Yeah. So anything that you can have that would be helpful for the House and for the Senate. And especially for the Senate, because, like you said, the House bill is already, well, it's passed, but I want to refresh people's memory because even if for some reason the Senate bill passes, when they go to conference, they'll have to work out and make one single bill.
That's right.
And that's the dangerous part, and that's why many people just say a no to both bills, because then they have to go back to each respective house and take a vote. So they'll have to vote in the Senate twice and go back and vote in the House once.
Yep.
So we want to give them lots of reasons not to be for these bills. Like I said, there's tremendous pressure for them to pass some bill.
Okay,
but you're saying that your sense is that the Senate would just as well just kick can down to the next period.
Yeah. if they didn't have, if they don't cave into pressure from the people that are on the opposite side of the fence from us, the Senate is getting a tremendous amount of pressure. And in fact, if you don't already know it, the Mental Health Association and NAMI and TAC, I think at a minimum, have a Tuesday advocacy day where they just give people scripts to send out letters by the thousands. Every Tuesday.
Wait a minute. Every Tuesday.
Yep.
Every
they have
Tuesday.
An advocacy day for the grassroots. And they tell them, this is what we want you to tell your legislators this week. Every Tuesday, our the people that we disagree with profoundly at every level are in touch with their legislators, telling them to support things that we know are absolutely horrible. That's why we need to get more organized. We have to get more organized. We
so those people feel like they've called their congressman and senator, you know, once or twice before. This is to say these other people are calling them every single week.
That's right. They are.
They're calling every. They're putting the pressure on them every single week.
Mm-hmm. Every week.
And I think this is a good time if your when your congressman and senator is at home, is to make an appointment and have a group of people to go. There's nothing like having, you know, 10 or 12 people to come into an office. But I would say make sure you have one or two people to speak and not everyone because, you know, you may find out that you only have 15 minutes or whatever. But,
yeah,
know,
that's
true. Define your message, and that's what to make sure you have a clear message. You know, so that
yeah, if
so
you haven't done it before, if you've never gone to meet with a legislator, particularly at the federal level, because I think you know local and state level people. All, always have their own idiosyncrasies, and it, that's also true of the federal government. If you've never met with your senator or House of Representatives member before, you can email me, and I'll talk you through it. But I think Yvonne's right. You have to be really organized. I have been to meetings where people just blurted out things that really mattered, everything in the world that was important to them. And unfortunately, the blurting strategy is not doesn't command the respect that we need. You have to be better organized. You can't just blurt. You have to have a really organized meeting, have, you know, at most 3 to 4 points that you want to make and have a way for people to continually reinforce those couple of points that you're making. But going into a legislator's office unorganized does not help you. You have to be organized ahead of time. And I can help you if you want.
And also I found that even though my person doesn't have a vote on the House floor, but I found that the staff people pay attention. If they ask for additional information, don't let that pass by.
Yeah.
You should have a time after you meet that you should have a debrief. In other words, where you get together somewhere, you know, an hour or something later or either a day or two later where it's still fresh, where you can hash out what happened and how you think it went. If they ask for additional information, make sure that the person in your group, that you get that information together and that you get it back to them.
Yes.
If they ask you for additional information, and they may, I found that this to be the case. And I learned this from being involved with NICL, which goes up to the Hill every year. Well, goes several times a year because NICL has, in the fall and November, they have a legislative reception. They will have a reception with food and stuff, invite congressmen and senators there. And if they ask for something, give it to them. You know, get back to them and give it to them. and make sure you find out who is it you just send it to, how you just send it. If they say send it by email, send it by email. If they said send it by hard copy, send it by hard copy. You know, if they say hard copy, ask them how many copies do they need, you know. So I think that that's very important. And I didn't know that they were sending, that the opposition was sending stuff every week.
Every Tuesday.
So
every Tuesday.
So those people who feel like they've called a couple of times, they say, I've already called my person, they know how. Just be aware that there are people that are calling your same person that you talked to maybe in January. They're getting a call from somebody every week.
They're getting an email letter.
They're getting an email letter or a letter with a stamp on it of some kind every week. That is a lot of pressure.
It's a call for organizing. It's a call for action, and it's a call to get more people. For if you're interested, go find five more like you. We need more. We've got to get bigger and stronger. We just have to. We don't have a choice.
Okay. Well, Val, thanks for coming on the show, and I want to open the line of one last time to if people have things they want us to talk about in future shows. I'm going to give us about, you know, maybe 5 or 10 minutes for people to come on. And if you want to call me and ask me about something, about having people on the show, you can call 202-758-5575. So if you want to discuss having, I've had some people, West Virginia want to have a just for a highlight of their state. So if you want to highlight your state and you have a couple of people that you want to have on, or if there's a particular hero or issue that you would like to see covered on Late Night with a Hero, please call me at 202-758-5575. Or either you can email me at recovery2000@gmail.com. I just want to see if anyone wants to come in before we call it a night. We usually go on for a little bit longer than this, but okay, any parting words, Sal?
Let's see. I think if you're if you want to let people know about the document that I uploaded to you, that's what the coalition beyond the National Coalition for Mental Health Recovery, beyond us, what a larger coalition of advocates are using as a talking point. I sent that to you, Yvonne. And so that gives the perspective of not just the Coalition for Mental Health Recovery, but for a number of national advocacy groups on the Hill.
Well, I'll put them up in all the groups, the Legislative and Attacks on Survivor and Alternatives and other groups. Did you send it to my email or you sent it by PM?
I sent it by Facebook.
You sent it by Facebook? Okay, I'll put it up now. I'll go, and as soon as I get off, I'll put it up so that people can see it. So you can, there are
I just want to say the last thing is that I am still working. I always think I can get it done sooner than I can, and I can't. I keep promising action alerts, and then I don't get them out when I say I could. But I'm working on it. I have an action alert. It's going to come out, and I will publish it in at least, you know, 4 places on Facebook and on the coalition's Google group. But I got to find something that's more inclusive than all of this because I can't keep going from pillar to post.
Well, if you give it to me, I'll put it on all the groups that I'm in, and I'll send you a note back which ones I put it in, okay?
Okay, that'd be great.
I can help. I can help you do that. And,
thank you.
And people can share. And if anybody doesn't isn't any on Facebook, because everybody's not, if they send an email to recovery2000@gmail.com and ask, if they've asked me or they can ask Val for the information, I'll pass it through. But as soon as I get off, it'll be up in the next 10 or 15 minutes, okay?
Oh, that's great. And then also, don't forget, if you get in touch with your legislator, let me know. Get in touch with me, val.marsh@ncmhr.org. Let me know so I can go tag team wrestling for you.
Yes, we will certainly do that. Thank you very much. And have a good night, everyone. I'll see you next Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, 6 Pacific. Have a good night.